So we went up. He was wearing his dress shoes. I was wearing hiking boots. And he kept reaching down to say, give me your hand. I think, thank you. You're going to slip. You slip on your own.
Louise Saunders.
So we went up. He was wearing his dress shoes. I was wearing hiking boots. And he kept reaching down to say, give me your hand. I think, thank you. You're going to slip. You slip on your own. But once we got there, the monk, sitting with the monk, and there was just one monk in residence, he was doing his meditation of 3 years, 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days. And although he didn't speak a lot of English, my guide did translate from time to time, but just listening to him, the peace in his voice was... It just sort of infused you with this sense of well-being. And he took my guide and myself down to where some of the very sacred relics were kept. And I was allowed to handle these relics and bless myself with them by raising them to my forehead. Now, these relics are pieces of stone reputed to have similar shapes to various bits of anatomy. And one does have to keep a straight face when one is handling these items and being told what they are.
So in your original idea was to learn more and to experience a country with Buddhism. It must have opened up more, though, in terms of interest to want to go back and to be able to teach. You obviously developed a great curiosity about the country as a whole, did you?
Well, yes. I've rather described it as quietly working its way into my psyche and establishing itself there. And when I went back in 2015 as a teacher, there were some other of my overseas teacher colleagues, not that I saw much of them, but who also very much agreed with that. Bhutan has a way of getting inside you.
Lynn Maher is my guest on ABC Radio. Getting in there as a teacher wasn't a straightforward process for you, was it?
No. By a little bit of research and courtesy of my good friend Mr. Google, I found that the only way to get to teach in a government school was through an organisation called the Bhutan Canada Foundation. And I really didn't see the point in going to a country like that to teach in a private school. So it's the application process. I mean, applications always are long and lots of forms.
Aside from being a teacher, which you obviously are, what were the other requirements that you needed to meet?
I guess they were looking for resilience, the ability to cope in developing world conditions, to be able to cope with different cultures. So having travelled reasonably extensively, albeit as a tourist, having spent a month at a time down in southwest Tasmania in camping conditions, I could...
You're up for it.
Meet those. I'm up for it. Yeah.
So when it came to a placement, did you have any say as to what sort of an area or how busy an area you'd be going to?
We were asked to choose from urban, such as urban is in Bhutan. It is a very small country with a very small towns and cities, through to like rural. And even remote was on the list. But remote in Bhutan means you have to walk there. And they decided they weren't actually placing teachers in remote schools as such. But I was as far away from the capital as you could probably guess.
Tell me about the trip in getting there.
Ah, well, it took... Well, once I'd flown into Paro, and flying into Paro is an experience in itself. So the pilot has to navigate the plane through some narrow valleys, then do a sharp left-hand turn, go over a ridge, and then he gets to see the runway 500 metres in front of him. So there's only a limited number of pilots.
I'm told they're all Bhutanese as well.
Permission to fly, yes.
What's that like looking out the window?
Awesome.
See, I say terrifying, awesome. But...
No, look, if you're sitting on the right side of the plane, you get really good views of Everest on a clear day, and that is just amazing.
Mm, that would be.
It is, yes. So once in Paro, there's an hour road trip through to the capital, Thimphu. Now, when I subsequently went back, one of my colleagues on the next trip after I went as the year teaching was absolutely horrified by this dreadful road between Paro, the airport, and Thimphu, the capital. Now, it's actually the best road in the country, but it is a little bit windy and there are some precipitous drops.
Yeah, when you say a little bit windy, I suspect you're underselling the experience there, are you?
Okay, Louise, are you familiar with Jacob's Ladder on Ben Lomond?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking that, right, okay, but with a big drop on the side.
Yes.
Okay, so after that trip, what next?
So we had a couple of weeks orientation in Thimphu, and then we were packed up with all our worldly goods and chattels in a couple of buses and a couple of other vehicles and packed off east. So for me, it was 4 days of travelling.
It can
be done quicker than that. So in a coaster bus, so one of the smaller buses, because there's no way you'd get a big bus on one of those roads. But then the final part of the journey was done in a flat tray type vehicle, because the last road just wasn't up for a bus.
How far are you travelling each day in the bus? Not too far in distance, I should imagine.
It's not so much the distance, it's the time it takes.
Right, I can imagine.
Because the country's roads are under repair and improvement, but there's sometimes landslides that you have to wait for a vehicle to come along and clear. Sometimes there's roadworks in progress and the road is just shut for 2 or 3 hours at a time. So,
certainly journeyed, didn't you? So, did you get right up to the door, or was there still some walking at the end for you just to get into the village itself?
No. So, the village that I was living in did have vehicle access all the way most of the time, but the road finished just a few hundred metres up the road from the school and from the house I was living in.
It's not too bad.
And the students that lived beyond that had to walk, so some of the students lived up to 3 hours walk away.
Each day they did that?
No, they boarded.
Right.
So I believe if they lived more than an hour's walk away, then boarding happened with no question.
Talking living and teaching in Bhutan with Lynn Ma. Tell me about the school. Who did it provide for?
Okay, so I taught in what was termed a lower secondary school. So it catered from children from prep class, 6-year-olds, through to grade 8. And I won't put an age on those students because it varied enormously. So students in Bhutan only get promoted from one grade to the next if their marks are sufficient. Otherwise, they get to repeat. So the eldest boy in my grade 8 class was 20, almost 21. The eldest girl in one of my grade 7 classes was 19.